Hi, everyone. This is Bob.
And this is Dennis.
You're listening to a show on the Radio Nostalgia Network,
which is also a member of the new Blueberry Network.
At Blueberry.com, the Radio Nostalgia Network, where the oldies are still young.
Want to thank our GoToMeeting sponsor for continuing to sponsor the Radio Nostalgia Network. You know, these days, whether you're in business or simply want to share something with your friends or family, email or voicemail just isn't enough. That's why you should try GoToMeeting, an online meeting solution that will revolutionize how you communicate with your business associates, friends, and family. GoToMeeting makes it easy to provide training and share information with coworkers, family, and friends. All you need is your PC, an internet connection, and a phone. You invite people to meet you online. Your attendees see your computer on their monitor. Best of all, you can meet as long as you want, as often as you need, for one flat rate. But don't take my word for it. Try it for yourself, free for 45 days. No credit card is required. Just visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It For Free button, and type in the promo code PODCAST. That's GoToMeeting.com, Try It Free button, promo code PODCAST. Try GoToMeeting free today.
Let's now join our featured presentation.
Hi, everybody. I'm Walt Hughes, and welcome to Thanks for the Memories. Here's Jack Armstrong from December 30th, 1940.
Jack Armstrong!
Jack Armstrong, the all-American boy.
Wave the flag for us and high, boys. Show them how we stand. Ever shall our king be champion, known throughout the land.
Wheaties, breakfast of champions, bring you the thrilling adventures of Jack Armstrong, the all-American boy. Say, when it comes to holding down one of the most interesting and exciting, yes, and sometimes one of the most dangerous jobs in the world, how would you like to trade places with Captain Bob Bartlett, the Arctic explorer? Think of it. You'd live for months in the land of ice and snow. You'd travel miles and miles across the frozen wilderness of the Arctic, where the winds howl constantly. You'd cross the ice barriers and deserted snow-covered plains where few white men had ever set foot. You'd feel the deep, penetrating cold of the North Country, a wintry chill that blasts the temperature down to 20, 30, 40 degrees below zero. Yes, sir, that's the kind of weather Captain Bob Bartlett faces on his Arctic exploring trips. And if you were traveling in the frozen North with Captain Bob, one of the first things I'm sure you'd learn would be to wear extra heavy clothing and to carry plenty of good, nourishing food along with you. The kind of food that supplies lots of fuel energy units to help keep you warm. And here's a big surprise. One of the very best heat-producing foods you could take on your Arctic exploring would be those crisp, toasted flakes of good whole wheat, the one and only Wheaties. Just you listen to what Captain Bob Bartlett says about Wheaties. He tells you, if you want to know how important it is to eat a good big breakfast, spend some time up in the frozen north, where it's not unusual to find the temperature 40 below zero or even lower. That's why I never go on an expedition without Wheaties. A heaping bowl full of Wheaties with plenty of milk or cream, sugar and fruit is a real breakfast of champions. The kind of breakfast a fellow appreciates when he finds himself surrounded by mile after mile of ice and snow. Yes, Captain Bob knows what a good cold weather food Wheaties are. And do you know why Wheaties are okayed as a champion winter breakfast dish? It's because of those important fuel energy units I mentioned. Wheaties are jam-packed with fuel energy units to help keep you warm. This means if you prefer those extra good Wheaties flakes in chilly weather, you don't need to switch over even once to a hot cooked breakfast. Wheaties are every bit as good at helping to keep you warm as an equal serving of hot whole wheat. You see, it's a mighty wise idea to stick to Wheaties this time of year. You're getting all of the well-known essential nourishment of real whole wheat. You're getting a flavor that hits the spot every morning. and you help yourself to a big supply of fuel energy. Ask for Wheaties tomorrow. And now, Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy. The two-master schooner Spindrift, with Jack, Billy, Betty, and Uncle Jim and the Filipina Michelle aboard, has fought her way through a terrific typhoon and has now arrived in the Sulu Sea. A gentle breeze has carried her along over smooth seas, and she has now arrived at the exact spot in the ocean where Professor Loring's chart indicates that his yacht was wrecked. In that yacht is a quantity of precious uranium-235, which Uncle Jim needs to recover for his experiments in atomic power. But there is nothing to indicate the presence of the submerged reef on which the yacht was sunk. And so now, while the Spindrift is standing by with all sails down, while her crew unload the autogyro plane, which Uncle Jim brought along to help find the sunken yacht, the foresail gaff, which has been rigged up as a derrick boom, and Jack and Billy and Uncle Jim are hoisting the autogyro out of the ship's hold, while Betty and Michelle stand by to assist. Listen.
Uncle Jim, I told Billy to sit on the tail of the fuselage to keep it down as we hoisted her.
Good. Help me pull and we'll hoist her up. Betty, you and Michelle stand by to keep the fuselage from scraping on either side of the hatch.
All right, Uncle Jim. I'll stand on this side, Michelle. You stand on that side.
Everyone all set?
All set, Uncle Jim.
All right, Jack. Heave.
She's coming up. Oh, my, Jack, I don't see how just you and Uncle Jim can raise it by yourself.
Black and tackle does the trick, Betty.
Watch it, Betty. She's swinging too much to your side.
I'll push her over, Uncle Jim. There. She's right in the middle of the hatch now.
Keep on pulling, Jack. We'll have her above deck in a moment.
We were lucky the typhoon didn't smash her up, Uncle Jim.
We can thank you and Billy for that, Jack. You did a splendid job of lashing down everything in the main hold.
Keep the tail of the fuselage down, Billy. She's going to scrape.
I'll do my best, Jack. There. She's clear now.
We'll raise her just a little higher, Jack. Then we can inspect her pontoons before we swing her overboard.
Well, they looked all right in the hold, Uncle Jim. But maybe they won't look so well in this bright sun.
All right, Jack. This is high enough. I'll swing her over the starboard deck and we'll look at the bottom of the pontoons.
This pontoon looks all right, Uncle Jim. I don't see a scratch on it.
That's great. This one looks sound as a dollar, too. I think we can set her overboard now, Jack. Swing the gaff way out.
Watch out for your head, Michelle. Here goes.
That's enough, Jack. Now lower away. We'll put her in the water and gas her up.
It's a good thing the sea is so calm.
Oh, we couldn't have set her overboard in a rough sea, Betty.
Easy now. She's almost touching the water.
There she is, Michelle. Climb down to her and unhook the block and tackle. Then make a breastline fast.
While you're doing that, Michelle, I'll have Billy get up the gas cans and the hose. Billy, bring those gas cans on deck.
All right, Uncle Jim.
Do you think it'll take long to find a submerged reef in a sunken yacht, Uncle Jim?
We may never find them, Betty. Professor Loring may not have been sure of his position when he marked it on the chart. On the other hand, we may spot them at once. Or we may have to hunt for days.
But we can't hunt for days. Chapada and Blackbeard and their crew may get here any time.
That's a chance we've got to take, Betty.
We can assume they're somewhere in the Sulu Sea looking for us, Jack. If they happen to be at their radio when that transit steamer saw us and reported us, they'll know exactly where we are.
Oh, it's too bad that little old steamer had the radio that they saw us.
That's the duty of all ships at sea, Betty. We were reported lost in the typhoon by the Manila authorities. All vessels were asked to be on the lookout for us.
And you can just bet that the Black Shark was all tuned in, waiting to hear where we were.
Billy has the gas cans on deck, Jack. You and he gas up the tank while I check over the engine. We don't want to lose any time hunting for that reef.
All right, Uncle Jim.
Here's the gas, Jack, and the hose and funnel, too.
Okay, Billy. I'll take the hose to the autogyro. Betty, you hold the funnel in this end of the hose while Billy pours the gas.
All right, Jack. Give me the end of the hose, Billy. I'll lash it to the rail.
Okay. It won't take much gas to fill that tank, Betty. I put some gas in before we hoisted her out of the hose.
Now, I'll hold the funnel, Billy. Are you ready, Jack?
Just a minute, Betty. I've got to unscrew the top of the gas tank.
I still don't understand how the autogyro flies without wings, Billy.
It's all in the rotors, Betty. They go round and round like a windmill and keep it up.
I know. I've seen her fly, but I just can't get used to an airplane without wings.
All right, Billy. Start pouring the gas.
You hold the funnel there, Betty. There, that's right. Keep your eye on that funnel, Betty.
Oh, I'm sorry, Billy. I was looking around the horizon for the Black Shark. I just know she's going to appear the moment we find the sunken yacht.
And that's why we've got to hurry. If they catch us on the high seas out of sight of land this way, they'll be a tough bunch to handle. But there's not a sign of her on the horizon.
And I'm afraid of sharks, too, Billy. If Uncle Jim and Jack have to put on those diving suits and go way underwater, the sharks may come around.
I know, Betty, but... Oh, wait a minute. Here, we need another can of gas. This can ought to fill the tank. Hold that funnel up.
There are sharks here, aren't there, Billy?
Yeah, you bet there are, Betty. But Michelle says he can scare them off, and he can fight them off with his knife, too. I've seen him do it.
Easy there, Billy. He's almost full.
Steer full.
If the engine runs all right, they're all set to start off, then. And I still don't see a sign of the black shark on the horizon.
Billy, come down here a moment.
Oh, coming, Uncle Jim. Pull the hose on deck, will you, buddy? I'm going to board the autogyro. What can I do, Uncle Jim?
Jack and I are all set to take off, Billy. We're going to search in a wide circle, keeping the schooner in the middle of our circles. You keep an eye on us. If we have to make a forced landing, you and Michelle hoist sail and come and pick us up.
But gosh, where's Uncle Jim? You don't expect anything to happen, do you?
Well, I don't know, Billy. This engine's been shaking about quite a bit in that typhoon. Anything might happen. But you keep an eye on it. If we come down and don't go back up in a minute or two, come and get us.
I'll keep an eye on you every second, Uncle Jim. And you can keep an eye out for the black shark. Maybe you can see her when you're up in the air.
We'll do that, Billy. Hop off now.
I'll unfold the rotors as soon as we drift away from the schooner, Uncle Jim.
All right, Jack. Cast off. This breeze will push us away in no time.
Stand by for the line, Billy. I'll heave it to you.
I've got it, Jack.
You can start unfolding the rotors, Jack.
I'm doing that, Uncle Jim. Well, say, they just spring out into position, don't they?
Now sit down in the cockpit beside me. Pull that cowling back over our heads. The engine noises won't bother us, then.
Back she comes, Uncle Jim. Say, it gets hot in here in no time.
We'll get ventilation when we get going. Let's see if the inertia starter works.
The starter works all right.
The engine's working too, Jack.
Hey, this noise-proof enclosed cockpit is something. Will it take long to warm the engine up?
She's warm before she starts in this climate, Jack. See how she's revving up already.
That oil temperature's climbing too.
She'll taxi along the water for a while until she gets good and warm.
Boy, oh boy, I'd forgotten what speed is like. Look at those pontoons sniping through the water.
Yeah, a little faster than the schooner, eh, Jack? Watch those rotors pick up speed as they go around. I won't apply the power to for this tack-off.
We're off, Uncle Jim. We're off the water already.
That's the autogyro for you, Jack. You can go straight up and down, almost like a helicopter.
We're certainly going up fast.
I'm trying to fly in circles, Jack, getting further and further away from the spin drift. You keep the sharp lookout to the right. I'll keep my eyes glued to the left. If that submerged reef is anywhere around here, we'll find it.
But if it's submerged too deeply, we'll never see it, Uncle Jim.
We can see any that's spring down to 30 feet in this water, Jack. And if the yacht struck that reef, the reef isn't submerged very far.
Then maybe the yacht is all above water, Uncle Jim.
I don't think so, Jack. If she'd stayed above water, nobody would have been lost. Since nearly everyone was lost, she must have struck the reef and settled back into deep water immediately.
I hope it's not too deep for us to reach with our diving suits.
And on the other hand, I hope it's deep enough so that she wouldn't break to pieces when that typhoon passed her. There must have been some real waves sweeping over that reef.
Uncle Jim, look over to the right. See where I'm pointing? The ocean seems to be a darker shade for a stretch.
Well, I see it, Jack. We'll fly over there and see what it is.
There. We're heading right for it now. Hold this course and we'll fly right over it.
That is the reef. We're pretty lucky. We might have had to look for days to find it.
And if we were in the spindrift, we might have sailed right by it without seeing it.
Take a look around the horizon, Jack. You see any sign of the black shark?
I've been looking for her, Uncle Jim, but I don't see a sign of any vessel on the horizon.
She's not very far away, I'll warrant.
We're getting close to that dark area, Uncle Jim. Do you think it can be the reef?
Certainly something under the water, Jack. It's too long and too narrow to be the reflection of a cloud. I'll drop down close to the water as we approach it.
It must be the reef, Uncle Jim. It's about a mile long and very narrow.
That is a reef, Jack. I can see why it wouldn't be charted. Not on the steamer lane, and a hydrographic boat might sail up and down the Sulu Sea for years and not see it.
It is a reef, Uncle Jim. I can see the long ocean swells build up as they sweep over it. My ship could see it in the daytime.
But not at night, and that's probably when Professor Loring's yacht struck. You're right, Jack. It certainly is a reef. I'm going to drop down right over it. We'll fly up and down and see if we discover any sign of the yacht.
Uncle Jim, we're dropping straight down. Say, I like this autogyro.
So do I, Jack. Now I'll hover over this spot for an instant. Can you see anything?
Nothing that looks like a wrecked ship, Uncle Jim. But I can't get over the way this autogyro can stay almost still and keep up in the air. Look out, we're almost touching the water.
I won't go any lower, Jack. We'll fly along the reef and see what we can see. Look sharp now.
I'm not missing a thing, Uncle Jim. Look, straight ahead of us. There's a vague shadow in the water right alongside the reef.
I see it, Jack. We'll be over it in a second.
It looks as though it might be a wrecked ship, Uncle Jim, but it's way underwater.
We'll know for sure in a second, Jack. Yes, by Jove, it is a wrecked ship. It slid back off the high ridge of the reef. It's about in 30 feet of water.
That is Professor Loring's yacht. It must be his yacht, Uncle Jim.
Yes, it must be, Jack. And in that yacht lies the treasure of uranium-235, which half the nations of the world would like to get hold of. You see any sign of the black shark yet, Jack?
Not yet, Uncle Jim.
Then we'll get the spindrift up here and start diving operations right away. And let's hope that the black shark doesn't show up until we're through and gone.
So the wrecked yacht is found at last. And if the Black Shark will only stay away for a while, Jack and Uncle Jim will have time to recover the precious uranium-235. But they'll have to work fast, because the Black Shark did pick up that radio message and is speeding toward the Spindrift with the diesel engine wide open. Hurry, Uncle Jim, there's no time to lose. And say, you'll certainly want to be on hand tomorrow when the Spindrift reaches the sunken reef. You'll want to be with Jack when he puts on that diving suit. So listen in at this same time tomorrow for another exciting episode of The Adventure of the Sunken Reef with Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy. Now, have you got the Wheaties all lined up for your breakfast of champions tomorrow and every morning this week? I have a hunch you're going to need lots of Wheaties, because they sure do taste good with milk or cream and your favorite kind of fruit. That's the breakfast you should be eating this week and every week.
Have you tried Wheaties? They're whole wheat with all the brands.
This is Franklin McCormick saying goodbye until tomorrow for General Mills, makers of Wheaties, breakfast of champions, who have just presented another episode of Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy.
So just buy Wheaties, the best breakfast food in the land. Wave the pipe for Hudson High, boys. Show them how we stand.
Here's another part of the Friday Night Show from July 29th, 2005.
Glad you're still there.
Great. It's great fun. And how many disc jockeys do you have doing shows on Yesterday USA?
What do we have on? We have 16,
well, I sat down and counted the staff. Now, these are on-air and off-air personality. We have about 40 right now.
Uh-huh.
But right now, because we have a couple of vacancies, do we count Bill? We have Bill on tape number one. We have Nolan Kern on tape number two. I don't know if we count Reginald Valley or not.
Sure.
Three, we have Dennis Daly and Milt Larson and David Berger on tape number three. Dan Riassi on tape number four, that's seven. Chris Sinko on tape number five, that's eight. Nobody right now holding down number six, folks, so you can send in an audition tape at 2001 Plymouth Rock Drive. You have Rudy Starks on tape number 7. There's a guy named Wong Hughes that has a show on tape number 7. Number 8, we have Coach Carl Booth on tape number 8. That's 11. Bob Lyons and Barbara Washington on number 9. That's 2 more. That's 13. Don Aston on tape number 10. That's 14. Mike Handy on tape 11. We have 2 on tape 12, I believe that is, Wayne Shari and
Tony Fournier, right?
Right, Tony Fournier at 17, Frank Brzee on 13.
Yay.
Hey, Frank! On tape 14, we have Kim Goff and the gentleman who does Wagon West.
Ed Livingston,
that's 20. Glenn Noyce is on tape number 15, he's 21. Ronnie Millsap and Dr. Dale hold down tape number 16, that's 23. And then we have, I don't know if you want to count the weekend lineup, but we have Carl Murray producing Twilight Zone. Mar Pearl produced
Milford Haven.
Maple Haven, that's 25. Dwayne Kilstrip has his show. And then, I don't know if we're going to count James Drury's reading, but that's produced.
Mm-hmm,
that's
sure.
27, and Red Steagall at 28. And then we have Jen Dolan produce REN, that's 29. And that doesn't count our weekly features, like OLF, mm-hmm. who is 30. She features the Jack Benny Show, Michael Beal, 31.
Mm-hmm.
And Martin Graham, who's 32, who comes on once a month to talk to me, and John and Lori Gaffman comes on once a month with me at 34. And we have Dick Birtle and Ed Corkin produce their interview show, that's 36.
Yeah.
Hey, I think we're getting up there.
Yeah.
So there's, right now, I don't think I've left anybody out. So 36 disc jockeys on the station at the moment.
Mm-hmm. And you could use some more.
We have two openings right now.
Now, Kim, explain to people how they can become a disc jockey at an enormous salary.
enormous zero.
Yeah, no salary, but a lot of fame around the world. Explain how they can do that.
You can send in an audition tape. I believe we have a 60, we may have a 60 and a 30 minute, and I think even a 90 minute available. But send in an audition tape. I'd say at least a half hour long. And make sure you have old-time radio shows, anywhere from, what, 1962 and earlier, Walden?
That's right. That's the standard at the moment.
Yeah. And just make sure you have access to plenty of them, because it'll be a show that airs every 2 weeks, so you're going to need more than five shows. clean quality, that you can understand it. No hissing and you know, pops. Well, pops is okay, but hissing, if it's really a show that, even if it's a great content story, if there's too much hissing, you can't understand it.
Right.
It bothers your ears, but our system, it takes out as much as it can of the hissing, but it also loses some of the audio.
And don't make it too muddy, folks. Don't try to go for a 10th or 12th generation copy if you can help it.
Right. And just do just a little bit of talking, maybe introduce yourself and let us know how many shows you have access to or you have in your possession.
Mm.
You might want to put a name, what you possibly want to call your show, and put it on a whole radio show, a whole half hour show, so we can listen to the quality, make sure, because you know some shows, a lot of them will come in and they sound really good at the beginning, but as you go through towards the middle and the end, it gets really bad. We just need a show that sounds clean the whole way through, that people can understand it. No swearing, cussing. What's it? No swearing, cussing, politics, or sports.
Oh, yep.
No, you take all the fun out of it now.
Yeah, it's no fun now, boy. And like you said, do a talk about yourself and play a radio show and
maybe you want to pick out a particular theme. Maybe you want to do all Western shows,
sure,
or all comedy shows, whatever.
Yeah, if like Dr. Dale does science fiction,
right?
So, and we have Ed Livingston that does Western. So if you have a lot of and you like mystery, comedy, suspense, you know, whatever, you can pick out a theme. It doesn't have to be, you know, a variety. It could be, you know, all theme-based, or, all drama or comedy, if you like. And that's about it, isn't it, Walden?
Yeah.
And then we'll get a bunch. What we'll do, the process takes so long, because what happens, we get shows in, and Bill has to sit down and listen to each and every one. And then with his work schedule, and now we're with him having a full-time job, we're a little bit more, we have more of a structured life now. We can get to these tapes a lot sooner than we did. And he'll listen to each one, and he'll make sure that the quality's good, and it's the content he wants on cassette. And cassette is important, because right now we are not set up for CD audio auditions, or even to play CD audio tapes if you're selected. Probably in the future, but right now it's just audio cassette, because Bill has to copy everything and do it
in a short amount of time.
Yeah, at high speed. So he has to have the time to put them together and then put them into our brand new automation system, which is cassette right now. We have two CD players that go. No, actually, I'm sorry, just one. But that's for REN, and that's a separate standalone system, but that just is for REN CD, because our content is so long.
Right, it's an MP3 format for them, but
yeah,
we try to shoot for audio, real audio if possible.
Right, and I personally, this isn't Bill's opinion, this is mine, I'd rather have real audio shows, like from cassette,
yes,
or CD, MP3s. They some of the MP3 sounds good, but a lot of times when there's a skipping, like on a record, you know, it will repeat the same word over and over. If it's a scratched record, the CD audios do the same thing, and I don't think that the people who send in, you know, who copy their radio shows from MP3 format realize that. And I personally prefer the cassettes because it's just a cleaner quality, or a regular audio CD that they copy onto a cassette tape
right. And
send in to us. That's me personally.
And it gets us the best high-fidelity sound possible.
Oh, but, yeah.
You know.
And send your auditions to Kim at Yesterday USA, 2001 Plymouth Rock Drive, Richardson, Texas, 75081.
Right.
Now, that means I'm not going to send you my new show.
Here is Cavalcade of America.
The DuPont Company of Wilmington, Delaware, makers of better things for better living through chemistry, presents the Cavalcade of America. Our play is Barbed Wire Christmas, based on the true experiences of GIs in a German prisoner of war camp. Our star, Edmund O'Brien. Time, a few days before Christmas, 1944. The place, an American prisoner of war camp, deep in Germany. In a snow-covered compound, a group of American prisoners stands shivering in the icy wind, waiting for morning roll call.
Achtung! Achtung! When you hear this whistle, you have come to attention.
A message from the commandant.
At the eve of Christmas, the curfew will be extended to 1 o'clock. Take notice. It's eve of Christmas only. On all other nights, as usual, any prisoner found outside barracks will be shot.
This is the story of that Christmas Eve. A Christmas that I and 4,000 other American enlisted men spent in a German prison camp. We lived in flimsy barracks, surrounded by barbed wire and trigger-happy German guards. We were forever cold and wet and hungry. And I mean really hungry. My name is Peterson, Sergeant Bert Peterson. As the elected leader of the 150 men of Barrack 35B, my main problem was to keep us all alive until the Allied armies came for us. And now, with another horrible German winter beginning, the only thing that kept us from doing something desperate and suicidal was our conviction that it wouldn't be too long now. Most of us kept up our hopes, but some, like a kid from West Virginia named Nick, like to sit around the barrack and worry about it.
Hey, Pete, how long you think it'll be, huh? I mean, before we get out.
I don't know, Nick. Soon, I hope.
Well, like when? I mean, make a guess, huh?
Well, I don't know. Maybe a month, if we're real lucky.
And we're real lucky type fellas. We got a roof over our heads, 3 square meals a month, and all the water we can drink. Who needs more? Outside of human beings, that is, or animals.
Why a month? Our guys are in Germany already, only 400 miles away now.
400 miles? Nothing at all. They'll be bouncing in here on their pogo sticks first thing tomorrow.
Hey, Blackie, where you been?
Over to the chaplain's office. Hey, you know we're all going to have a midnight mass Christmas Eve in the chapel.
Ain't that charming now? What do you mean, we all?
I mean the whole camp, anybody who wants to come.
That's better, because frankly, I couldn't be less interested.
Yeah, we know. Hey, Milstein?
Yeah?
Father Moran wants to know if you'll sing at the service.
Hey, Pete.
Sure, why not?
Hey, Pete, you hear the BBC news this morning?
No, I didn't, Miller. Why?
Well, this Jerry God was talking outside just now. And he said that the Americans and the British were retreating like crazy back into Belgium. And that the war was just starting, and he said we'd be here for years yet.
They're always yakking like that.
You really believe that stuff? I don't know. That is just what I heard, is all.
Well, we can check it tonight on the radio. But it sounds phony to me.
It better be, because I ain't staying here another winter.
You're not, huh?
No, my friend, I'm not. I had plenty last winter. More than plenty. And I ain't taking it again.
So, what you got in mind, Nick?
There's 4,000 of us, ain't there? 4,000 against a handful of crowds.
Nick, you ever hear about Luft 3? Our guys tried a mass break there, remember? And they got mowed down like so much hay. Not one man got out. Not one.
So they didn't plan right, that's all. All I know, if that stuff about the Jerry's counterattacking is on the level, I ain't staying here. And, brother, I won't be the only one. Believe me that.
I believed him, all right. If the news was true, there'd be all kinds of desperate prison breaks, all resulting in one thing, plain, simple suicide. That night, to catch the BBC news, I hauled out the Crestle set I'd built. Radios were strictly forbidden by the Jerrys, so we had to take precautions.
What do you want me, Pete?
Get that window, huh, Sid?
Okay.
Hud, you get by the door and sing out if you hear anything.
Right.
And loud, because I can't hear so good with these earphones on.
Okay. All clear here. Nobody coming?
All right, now keep it quiet, huh? The news ought to be on right now.
What's he saying, Pete?
Yeah, is it on?
What's he saying?
Is it news?
Quiet, will you? Quiet. I can't hear. Yeah. I got it. I think it's London. Yeah. Here's the news now.
This is London calling. On the Western Front,
situation is increasingly serious. In vicious counterattack, German forces have bulged back into Belgium. Some places to depth of 50 miles. United States 101st Airborne Division reported to be cut off and surrounded at Bastogne.
Oh. So it's true, huh? So it's true. So we're never getting out of here. Never getting out of here.
Yes, it seemed to be true, all right. Very little was said that night after the news. The lights went out at 9, as usual. And as we crawled into our sacks, no one slept. Each man I knew was lying there thinking, brooding, planning. Slowly building himself up to a state of suicidal desperation. As barrack leader, it was my job to get their minds busy with something else. But what? Finally, long after midnight, I thought of something. And in the morning, first thing after roll call, I called the barrack. All right, you guys, simmer down now, huh? Now, the purpose of this meeting, well, it's not very long until Christmas, and, well, we haven't done anything about it.
What? The Yuletide season upon us so soon? Gracious me, our time doth fly.
Christmas in this place, who cares?
Well, I do, Nick, for one.
You would.
Okay, so I'm a sentimental fool. But I had some kind of a Christmas tree, for instance, every year of my life, and some kind of Christmas dinner. And I'm going to have them this year. Jerry's or no Jerry's?
Count me in, Pete.
Me too.
Okay, Blackie.
And the name's Milstein. And I still think it's a good idea.
That a boy said.
Like I said, I still don't care.
Oh, shut up, will you? What do you got in mind, Pete?
Well, like a Christmas tree, for one, and decorations, and some kind of special dinner. And we could put on a show. And later, there'll be the midnight mass for whoever wants to go.
Goody, goody, goody.
Bud, will you shut up with that stuff?
You want to go to your mass, you go to your mass. This is a free country.
That's a joke, son?
Just slipped out, Sid. Forget it.
Anyway, we got to have some committees. Say, Blackie.
Yeah?
How'd you like to be chairman of the dinner committee?
Okay, sure.
Now, Hud, you're the comic around here. Suppose we put you in charge of the show.
Oh, no, no, you don't, boy.
Okay, we vote. All those in favor of Hud being chairman of the entertainment committee, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
Oh, for Pete's sake, I don't... Oh.
And this show better be good, boy, or you're going to get 4 dozen ripe tomatoes right in the... Hey, I'm going crazy or something? Who's got tomatoes, huh?
And so began what I came to think of as Operation Christmas. And it started to work. In each of us, memories of wonderful Christmases long past were stirred into life. And strangely, each of us began to think of Christmas as his own personal possession, to be recreated here in this dismal place, down to the last minute detail. There were even a few arguments.
A star on top of the tree? How come? Certainly a star. What else, for Pete's sake? An angel, you dope. You gotta have an angel on the tree. An angel? You crazy or something? You always have a star. Star of Bethlehem. Somebody, you don't even know what Christmas is about?
Sure, I know what Christmas is about. Look, didn't this angel come to the shepherds out in the field and tell them that Jesus was born and where to find him?
Yeah.
Okay. That's why you always have an angel on top. And I'm chairman of the decorating committee, and we're having an angel.
Okay. Okay, so we put both on top. Put a star and an angel, okay?
Okay. All right. Okay, no need to get so sore about
it. Well, who's getting sore?
Yes, there were arguments, but behind them all was a deep common concern, a common spirit, the spirit of Christmas. And as Christmas Eve drew near, our tensions and worries were forgotten in our preparations for the party.
All right, so now a report from the dinner committee. Blackie?
Right. Well, this is what we got worked out, fellas. Each guy puts in 2 squares of K rations and 1 square D bar, and then he gets some prunes, a couple of slices of Spam, and some liver paste, depending on what he's got. And I'm going to make us some cake out of what is commonly referred to as ingredients, being namely some sodium bicarb tablets.
And thank you, Fanny Farmer.
Yes, everything was going fine. And then the worst happened. It was the morning of Christmas Eve. We were all busy with our various job in the barracks when we heard the shout that meant we weren't alone.
Is it Jerry in the house? Jerry in the house!
Achtung! Barracks leader. Where is
he? Here. What's on your mind?
A message from the commandant. Tonight it may be forbidden to have the midnight mass.
Quiet!
What do you mean, forbidden?
The 1 o'clock curfew will still be allowed. But the mass is forbidden.
Just a minute, fellas, just a minute. Why not? Why no mass?
I do not make the order, Sergeant. All I know, the mass is forbidden. Forbidden! That's Dallas. Set!
What's the matter? They've gone crazy. What's the matter with the man?
I don't know. They always got some stupid reason.
How do you like that?
I don't. Not a bit.
You know, I got a notion to go anyways.
Yeah. They want trouble, we'll give them trouble.
Ah, what are you yakking about, Hud? You weren't going anyway.
All right, so I never had much use for that religious stuff. But to me, having a mass not to go to is just as big as your having a mass to go to.
Try it again in English.
Maybe it's more like this, Blackie. You're a Catholic, and I'm a Jew, but we've only got one chapel in here, and, well, he happens to be Catholic, so, well, we've got to sort of spread him around, so to speak. When he talks about God, I think of my God, and Pete here thinks of his, and Hud here thinks of his.
Assuming he's got one.
Sure, I got one. What do you mean? You think I'm some kind of atheist or something? One more time.
No, nobody said that, Hud. Nobody said that. And let's simmer down, huh?
Well, I'm going over to the chapel tonight, and I'd like to see the Jerry or anyone else who's going to stop me.
Me too. I'm going too.
They'll kill you. They'll kill all of you.
They wouldn't dare.
What difference does it make for Pete's sake? Who's going to live here anyway?
Yeah, I promised to sing Pete, and I'm singing.
So we're all going, Pete, whether you like it or not. What are you going to do about it, boy?
Do about it? I don't know, hon. I frankly don't know. Christmas Eve, 1944. We were a bunch of GIs in a prisoner of war camp in Germany. As a barrack leader, I found myself faced with a serious problem. My guys were going to chapel for midnight mass, whether it meant getting shot or not. All I could do was go over and take it up with other barrack leaders. And when I got to their office, there were a couple of dozen other guys standing on the steps, barrack leaders and compound leaders, and also the chaplain, Father Moran.
Hello, Pete. You too, eh?
How are you, Padre? Say, what goes on here anyway?
Well, it's a strange and wonderful thing, Pete. It seems that 4,000 GIs, Catholics, Protestants, and Jews, are suddenly all up in arms about a mass that most of them weren't going to anyway. So we've asked the commandant to meet us here.
Everybody, huh?
Uh-huh.
I thought it was only my guys.
Hey, look.
Oh, yeah. Here he comes. Private army and all.
Alf! You asked to see me? About what, Captain Moran?
Colonel, it's about the mass. First you gave permission, and now you've forbidden it. And our men
are... The Gestapo in the city forbid it. Too many men in one place, not wise.
But, Colonel, the men are determined to go.
So you tell them it is forbidden?
Excuse me, Colonel. They know it's forbidden. They know they might get shot. But they're at the point right now where they don't care. So if you want a few thousand corpses on your hands, you're going to get them.
No, I want no trouble here.
Then may I suggest that you ask the Gestapo to reconsider?
Very well, I will ask, but the answer will take time, Captain. If it does not come before midnight, the order must be enforced, regardless of the consequences. You will tell your men the order will be enforced. Forward!
Well, Padre?
I don't know, boys. We could call off the service, just close up the chapel. But if the men show up anyway, I think I'd better be there to head off trouble. You know, I just can't get over it. I mean, what crazy, contrary, unreasonable, stubborn, and still profoundly wonderful characters Americans can be. I just can't get over it.
Well, I went back to the barrack and briefed the guys on what I'd heard. They listened and nodded and said nothing. They hadn't changed their minds about going to the mass, just didn't want to argue about it. Barrack 35B was really something to see that night. Nick and Miller had built us a beautiful tree made out of branches fastened to a broomstick handle, and it was decorated with garlands of white tissue, scraps of colored paper, and spirals of tin from our powdered milk cans. And on the very top, there was an angel carved from soap, fastened to a cardboard star. Yes, it was really something to see. Dinner time came, and still no word from the commandant. We had a fine Christmas Eve dinner that night. The spam was fried just right, and the potatoes were boiled to perfection. For dessert, we each had 3 stewed prunes and a slice of Blackie's specially baked cake. Pretty good, too, whatever he'd made it out of. And then came the long-awaited show. We had all kinds of acts, but one I remember especially was Nick. Because he sang of home.
On top of Old Smoky, all covered with snow, I lost my true lover from courting too slow. On top of Old Smoky, I went there to weep for a false-hearted lover.
We had comedians, too, like the act that Hud and Blackie put on.
Ah! Here I am, a German unteroffizier. I was trying to make an honest living, and here comes another of those new American prisoners.
Ah! You there!
I'm looking for the prisoner of war camp. Have I come to the right place?
Oh, are you there, no? Kriegsgefangen, galong, galong, galong,
galong. Your language! So happens that I know every word of the Geneva Convention.
Oh, sir!
Where have I heard that before?
Quiet, please!
From your insolent manner, I wonder if I've come to the right place. Well, anyway, take me to the dining room. I'm hungry enough to eat a horse.
To eat a horse?
Yes!
Yeah, you have come to the right place.
Yes, it was a fine show. But under all the laughter and applause, we knew that the men were still determined to go to that mass, come what may. It was late when the show ended. We sat around quiet now and exchanged Christmas presents with our best buddies. They were strange gifts, some of them, but very precious in many ways.
Hey, how do you like that? A can opener. Hey, Sid, where'd you get it? This isn't the one you had.
You think I'm out of my head giving you my only can opener? No, I had an extra one.
Well, fine. I mean, thanks. Thanks a lot. It's real charming of you, boy. Here. Huh? Here, I got something for you.
Hey, guys, the time. Huh? It's almost 12. Anybody interested?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm interested.
Me too.
Hey, just a minute, hey. Just a minute, fellas. Now, please, give me a minute. I'll be brief.
Yeah, well, the briefer the better. Come
on, all right, so right now, we never had it so bad. But we'll get out of here. You know we will. If we can just stay alive a little while longer. Don't forget, we've got lives waiting to be lived back home. We've got girls waiting and kids waiting to be born and raised and houses waiting to be lived in. Warm houses with good food on the table. Okay. Okay, you don't want any part of it. Okay. So go on out now and get yourself shot.
I might be right, you know.
Well, maybe so.
Hey, outside, look. Hmm? Whole mob of guys from the other barracks heading for the chapel.
Okay. There's going to be a mess. I'm going to sing.
Yeah, let's go. Jerry's want to stop a few thousand of us. Let him try.
Come on, Sid.
Well, Pete, how about you?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I'm coming. Let's go.
The chapel was already jammed when we got there. There wasn't room for those who came after us, and soon there were hundreds of guys outside, bunched around the open doors and windows, standing hatless in the snow. Inside, up by the cardboard candlelit altar, somebody I couldn't see began to play the wheezy old organ. The faces around me were tight with determination and anxiety. Where were the Jerrys? Why hadn't we run into any on our way to chapel? Obviously, they were laying low. But why? We didn't know. We were tense and afraid. Whatever Father Moran felt during that midnight mass, it didn't show. For him, the Jerrys and their barbed wire no longer existed. It was Christmas, and he was honoring the Prince of Peace. And then from outside, we began to hear something. And a whisper, starting among the men outside in the snow, swept inside the chapel from man to man, men whose nerves were at hair-trigger tension.
The Jerrys are coming.
Okay, let them start something.
The Jerrys.
Come on, the Jerrys. They want trouble. Come on, we'll give them trouble.
The Jerrys were coming. We could see them, coming towards us across the snow, rifles in hand. In a minute or two, they were at the chapel door. We held our breath and waited. Not a man among us moved. But we were ready for anything. Then Father Moran turned.
Dominus vobiscum.
And seemed to give a nod to Sidney Milstein.
Silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright, round yon virgin mother and child, holy infant so tender and mild.
As Sid sang that age-old hymn, the Jerrys pushed their way into the chapel, and overcrowded as it was, gradually our prison place of worship was filled with our guards and captors. I knew that one of them was right behind me, but I didn't turn around.
Silent night.
Nacht, heilige Nacht, alles schläft.
Hey, listen. Yeah. How do you like that?
And then we knew. The Jerrys weren't there to stop us, but to join us. In all our anger and fear, we'd forgotten one thing. It was Christmas for them, too. And remembering this, we began to sing. We all began to sing.
Slowly.
The sky seemed wonderfully clear that night as we walked back to our barracks, and the stars strangely bright. We didn't have to talk because each man's thoughts were alike. We knew now that the words we'd heard for so long were really true, that Christmas isn't only an anniversary, but a universal spirit of brotherhood, of peace, and goodwill. And in realizing these things, we'd lost our fear. We knew somehow that it wouldn't be long, that we'd soon be free, that we'd soon be home. And we knew, too, that this would always be the most memorable Christmas of our lives.
Sleep in heaven.
Thanks to Edmund O'Brien and the Cavalcade Players for tonight's true story. Barbed Wire Christmas was written by Warner Law in collaboration with David Gerber and was based on Mr. Gerber's personal experiences in the German prison camp. Original music for tonight's DuPont Cavalcade was composed by Arden Cornwell, conducted by Donald Voorhees. The program was directed by John Zoller. With our star, Edmund O'Brien, you heard Gary Wahlberg, George Petrie, Bill Zuckert, Ross Martin, Harry Jackson, Ed Jerome, Tony O'Selwart, Kermit Murdoch, Dan Ocko, and Nelson Olmsted.
The DuPont Cavalcade of America came to you tonight from the Belasco Theater in New York City and is sponsored by the DuPont Company of Wilmington, Delaware, makers of better things for better living through chemistry.
Tonight, just for laughs, listen to Red Skelton on NBC.
That's the Cavalcade of America. I'm Warren Hughes, and may the good Lord Jesus Christ bless you. This is Yesterday, USA.
Yesterday, USA, Superstation.
Well, how do, everybody? Bill Bragg coming your way here. On the tail end of tape number 7, for the 2-week period that began, well, the 6th day of November, and my goodness gracious, the auction's going to be here before you know it. It'll be the last Sunday night of November, to be exact. We'll start early at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Now, that's November 26th. Mark this on your calendar. November 26th at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And we want you to pre-register your credit card so that you'll be eligible for the great giveaway prize that we have. We're having a raffle prize. And every time you buy something, you get a raffle ticket. And if we draw your raffle prize ticket, then you're going to win the raffle. And so far, we're going to have 2 prizes. But so far, we've got a wonderful, it's not an antique, but it looks like an antique wind-up phonograph. It's an AM-FM radio, and I believe a cassette player as well. And it also plays phonograph records. And it is one of the coolest things ever. We have one in our collection. And I know you'll want one, too. And all you have to do to win it is to buy something. And the more you buy, the more raffle tickets you get. And the more raffle tickets you get, the better chance you have of winning the prize. So we'll need you to pre-register your credit card. And when you do that, that'll guarantee that your items will be shipped out the very next day. Now, if you don't buy anything, then we won't charge your credit card, so you can be assured of the fact that if we don't use your credit card, that all that information will be destroyed after the auction. Also, don't forget that on Sunday night, November 19th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, we will preview all the auction items. We'll sit here and we'll open up the phone lines and we'll take your questions. And we'll talk about each and every item that is being auctioned off. So these are the dates to remember. November 26th, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. That's the night of the auction. Be sure and pre-register your credit card by November 24th. And join us live on Sunday night, November 19th, at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, while we preview all of the auction items. Now, step-by-step information is available right now on our website at www.yesterdayusa.com. When you get there, just click in the upper left-hand corner where it says Enter the Website, and you will see all the information about not only the auction, but the Yesterday USA Family Reunion. And that's coming up, too, November 28th through December 2nd. And we're going to be doing a lot of fun things. I know we're going to have some really great visitors here during the family reunion, and we'd like for you to be one of them. That information, too, is available on our website at www.yesterdayusa.com. All you have to do is just click right there where it says Reunion Information or Auction Information. Come to the website, www.yesterdayusa.com. Enter the website, the upper left-hand corner in the red letters. Read about the auction. Support the auction. I need you to send in something right now because we don't have nearly enough items. We're dependent on you, so whatever you do, don't you dare let us down. Send in something now. The mailing address is 2001, that's 2001, 2001 Plymouth Rock Drive, Richardson, Texas. The zip code is 75081, USA. We're dependent on you. Don't you dare let us down.